The following is a paid program.
The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome into our Football Friday edition of the Leach Report for a sultry Friday. We'll get a little bit of a break in the weather tomorrow, but it's just a hot, hot period here. You wish it was going to be cooler when the Gators were coming to town to help Kentucky a little bit. But such is life. The Wildcats and the Gators tomorrow night, sold out Kroger Field. We'll talk about the matchup today with Van Hiles, former Wildcat and NFL player. Tom Hart of ESPN. He's not working the game tonight, but he did work the Kentucky-Florida game last year down at the Swamp. So we'll get his take on that game and this matchup. And Mike Pratt, who normally is with us on Thursdays, but we moved him to Friday this week. So that's our guest lineup for the day. Let's get right to the Wildcat news of the day. It is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Mark Stoops met with the media yesterday after practice, said everything's going well for Sawyer Smith. It's been a solid week, and they're ready to go. He said he was asked about Xavier Peters, who's been granted his eligibility now by the NCAA. Stoops downplayed any immediate impact. Peters has been with the scout team, so now he's over working with the ones and twos and getting integrated into the game plan week by week. So it'll just grow from week to week, one would think, as long as he does well and stays healthy. And at some point, he'll be fully up to speed. But he's playing a position, that Jack linebacker position, that there's a lot of, as Stoops said, a lot to learn, a lot of, to use his word, nuances. And Peters played with his hand on the ground exclusively at Florida State last season, so now he's playing a different role as a stand-up player. And again, up until just a couple of days ago, he'd been running the other team's defense once the season started. So I wouldn't expect any big immediate impact. Kentucky picked up a basketball commitment yesterday. Lance Ware, as expected, 6'9" forward, who is, from all accounts, a very versatile big. Really upped his stock this summer with how he performed and things like the Peach Jam. Tomorrow, Terrence Clark is set to make his announcement and expected to reclassify to the 2020 class. And he, according to just about every pick I've seen, is going to say Kentucky. And if so, it would be John Calipari's first top five commit since Scal Labissiere in the 2015 class. Congrats to Landon Young, one of 22 players named to the American Football Coaches Association Good Works team for his community service. Going to be fun to watch Landon in action tomorrow against probably Grenard, I think, plays mostly on that side for Florida. The Kentucky tackles against the Florida defensive ends is going to be one of the more intriguing strength-on-strength matchups in this game tomorrow. Tip time for Kentucky and Texas Tech has been set in Lubbock. It'll be a 6 o'clock start there. California Horse Racing Board Chairman Chuck Winter came out yesterday with a statement refuting several points that were raised in that New York Times story that we told you about yesterday, including the fact that Justify was not the only horse to show the banned substance in their system, and that's part of why they concluded it was a positive test that was the result of environmental contamination. It'll take a while for us to be able to get enough info, I think, to make informed conclusions on this. One thing, I think that racing needs to be more transparent and do a better job of crisis management in these situations, and try to be more proactive to where it's not looking like you're covering things up, and it's a bad look, certainly, this week for racing. It also is not the first ready, fire, aim story for the New York Times writer that's involved. So, again, give it time. Let's get all the info in that we can, and then you'll be able to probably make some more informed conclusions on this. Let's see. Kentucky volleyball, number 15 in the country, hosting the Bluegrass Battle this weekend. And they will play Cleveland State today at noon, Florida Gulf Coast at 8:30, and Indiana tomorrow at 2 as part of the round robin that they will play in the Bluegrass Battle, all those matches at Memorial Coliseum. Links to the stories that we talk about each day can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Our show is served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Remember to post your pictures wearing your UK gear at your tailgate party or your game watch party and tag at Wild Eggs Lexington on Facebook and post on your Facebook page. And when you do that, you'll be eligible for a drawing for a $25 Wild Eggs gift card to be the most enthusiastic Wildcat fan. So make sure you do that tomorrow. Tweet your picture in UK gear and tag at Wild Eggs Lexington on your posts on Facebook and Instagram, etc. And then they're going to have a drawing a couple of times this season for a Wild Eggs tailgate experience. And you can go by either Lexington location in Hamburg or Palomar and look for the football out in front of the store and get details on how to enter. Heading to a break. Van Hiles when we come right back on the Leach Report.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Yeah, Terry's a little bit faster. You know, maybe a quicker, maybe a step or two ahead. But, you know, Sawyer puts the ball where it needs to be. You know, sometimes it's not going to be a dart. It's not going to be, an 80-yard pass, but it's going to be where it needs to be. And gives the opportunity for the receivers to run underneath it, make a catch, and, put them in position to get in the end zone. So, like I said, everybody's got, 100% faith in Sawyer and what he can do on that field. So I'm really looking forward to see what he can do for us.
That was Cash Daniel talking about his teammate Sawyer Smith stepping into the QB role, starting QB role with the injury to Terry Wilson when the Cats take on top 10 Florida tomorrow night at Kroger Field. We welcome in Van Hiles on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline to talk about this matchup. And we'll start with Sawyer Smith, Van. A little bit of a limited glimpse of him last week in the relief role against Eastern Michigan. And then I'm sure you've watched tape of his games at Troy. What do you like about Sawyer Smith as a QB?
The biggest thing I like is his poise. I'm gonna give a little hot take, I guess. He has a little bit of Tebow in him. I think he's a good leader. He's a thick body, which I think will help us with the zone read. He's not obviously as explosive and dynamic as Terry, but I think we can run him in between the tackles a little more because I think he has the body to take that punishment.
Yeah, so maybe in some short yardage, some red zone stuff, he's effective as a out of the run pass or out of the zone reads, but maybe not as dynamic scrambling away from the rush and getting 25 yards or something.
Exactly. He is more of like Tebow. The great thing about, to me, Tebow as far as that hurts the defense on first and 10, you can run him kind of like a running back and get you 5-4 yards, get you ahead of the chain. I think that's a nice thing I think Sawyer can bring. He's tough. So I think he's a good addition. It hurts losing Terry, but I don't think it hurts as much as if we had to bring in a true freshman.
Eddie Grand said this week that Sawyer knows the whole playbook, so they don't have to pare down their offensive system. One would think, though, that they'll call the game a little differently. Would you agree?
I'm not sure about calling the game a little differently. I just think the result of certain plays are going to be a little different. I think he has the similar skill set. He's just not as dynamic. I think that's the biggest difference is that explosiveness that Terry can go from 0 to 60 in X amount of seconds. I think that's the biggest difference. I think they're similar, except body type, but as far as talent wise, I think they're a little different except for that explosiveness.
The one thing we don't know, we're not in that huddle, how they're taking command of it. You know, Steven Johnson, I was saying earlier this week, didn't have as much on his resume as Sawyer Smith does. But what we do have a record of is how Steven produced once he got his chance. And he was a tough guy and just a great leader. And so now we get to see what Sawyer Smith will look like.
Exactly. From everything I've heard, it seems like the players – I've gravitated towards him. So, I mean, to be a transfer and to have your teammates gravitate to you like that, that means he has something in his personality to ease that transition. So there's something there that, obviously all the players were excited after the touchdown throw to Wagner. So there's something there. I don't know how demonstrative he is. I think he's maybe a little bit more than fiery than Terry. I think Terry's a little more calm. So it depends on how everybody reacts to that. But it seems like they actually did a pretty good job in the last game.
We're talking with Van Hiles, former Kentucky defensive back, played in the NFL as well. Let's move to the matchup with the Gators. What are areas where Kentucky might have an edge that you think it can exploit? And what are the areas where it's got to try to disguise a disadvantage or make up for a disadvantage?
The biggest edge I see us having, which is scary and says where our program is and where it's heading, is I think we have the advantage on the line, which I would have never thought I would say that against Florida. I think our defensive front is much better than Florida's O-line, and I think our O-line matches up very well with Florida's D-line. The area of concern that I might have, which has lessened a little bit with Tony being hurt, is the explosiveness at the wide receiver position. Playing Florida after playing whomever the prior week or the prior 2 weeks, it's a totally different speed, and it takes a little time to adjust to that speed. But since they lost probably their best playmaker, maybe the best player on the team, I think that helps our secondary and our linebackers a little bit more this week than if he was playing.
We're talking with Van Hiles on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. Need to get to a break. We're going to come right back, have a little more of a chat with Van a little later. Tom Hart from ESPN and Mike Pratt. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We'll be right back.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach KY.
Van Hiles with us as we break down the Kentucky-Florida matchup. By the way, the CBI Insurance Game Day forecast calling for clear skies and high in the mid-80s around kickoff tomorrow, but probably drops about 10 degrees over the course of the game once the sun goes down. Van, you talked about the Florida wide receivers versus the Kentucky secondary. Secondary is your position. That was a big question mark for Kentucky coming into the year. What have you seen? What are your impressions of how those inexperienced Kentucky guys in the secondary have acquitted themselves so far?
I think they've been solid. Little, small things, errors that they need to tighten up. I think the underneath coverage needs to be a little bit better. I know for fans, a lot of times as a corner, you think when they throw those out routes and those comebacks that it's on a corner. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's on the underneath coverage, not getting to their curl flat responsibility. I think as a whole, when we play actual man-to-man and we match up man-to-man on the guy in front of us, we actually play very well. Zone coverage is usually the area that is hardest to pick up for the younger kids because usually they play just man in high school, as I've noticed. So the man is good. The zone needs some work. But as a whole, I think the unit has played pretty well.
What about their tackling coming up playing the run?
The safeties have been really good. Griffin and Corker has been really good with their fits with the linebackers the whole season. I haven't seen too much corner work, but the scheme is different. The scheme is totally different from what we played back in the old days. So it's kind of hard to judge the corners, but the safeties have been very solid as far as run fits, making sure tackles. As long as you get the guy on the ground, that's all that matters.
When Kentucky has the ball, they expect to see a steady dose of blitzes from Todd Grantham's defenses under normal situations, but I would think that would be even more so with a new quarterback, right?
If we get into third and long situations, I think if we win on first and second down, I think that lessens that ability to pin the defensive end to pin their ears back. Grantham is very good on pass blitzes, but I think we have done very well against him on run blitzes. So I think if we stay ahead of the chains, I don't know if that means we need to throw a little hitch to Wagner on first down or we just continue our RPOs. I'm not sure. But if we stay ahead of the chains, I think we can neglect that blitz that Florida has thrown. And plus, I think our O-line is better than any of the first two teams they'll face. So I'm not too worried about it, but we win on first downs. But that's any game. Win on first downs is makes Grant's job very easy to call plays after that.
You mentioned Ahmad Wagner. Kyle Tucker, who's with us on Wednesdays, has another great read up at theathletic.com, and this one's on Wagner. And he talked to the basketball coach at Iowa, Fran McCaffrey, who had nothing but really positive things to say about Ahmad's time there. And then Vince Marrow's, talking about how he saw something in Wagner that led him to stay after him even after Ahmad decided to go play basketball. He's about 2 weeks before training camp, it wasn't even sure how prominently he was going to be in the rotation, and he really started to come on, got a start, his first start in the first game, and he's developing into a real go-to guy now. Fun to watch what he can do, and ought to be a real asset for Sawyer Smith to just have a kind of a safety net there in him to throw it up to.
It is always great as a quarterback to have a receiver with a catch radius. That means your passes don't have to be as perfect. The other thing is that I like about him that is impressive is that he's not only a nine-route receiver anymore. He has shown that he has improved his footwork. He has improved his route running. He has really good hands. He knows how to use his body. The only thing I can say that I would like him to do more is to come back to the ball, because playing against these SEC corners, if he waits on the ball, there's a chance that SEC corner, Florida corner, whoever that is, get a chance to cut in front of him and get an interception or possibly a PBU. With his big body, if he learns to come back to the ball, attack the ball more, he'll be even more dangerous. He has made the wide receiving core a threat now.
Good stuff, Van. I appreciate the time, as always. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
I sure will.
That is Van Hiles, former Wildcat. One of our listeners tweeted in and said, best compliment I can give him is that his football knowledge is on par with Freddie Magro. That's a strong compliment, and he is great to hear Van break things down. You could tell, obviously, he knows what he's talking about, and he can get you some of those fine points, like the one he just mentioned about Wagner. By the way, Michael says we need to shout out to all the listeners over at Country Boy Brewing in Georgetown waiting for the KSR show that are listening in, so we're glad to have you guys on board. We'll be right back on the Leach Report.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
It's the second half of our Football Friday show as we welcome to the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline Tom Hart from ESPN. And our regular producer Shannon tells me you have been less than complimentary of the mustachioed look for Mr. The Dude.
Tom, the way you say that makes it sound so elegant. It is anything but elegant. It looks like a caterpillar crawled up on his face and died overnight.
Hey, now. Hey. I'm going for the Ron Burgundy look, you know?
Nothing against caterpillars. I didn't say caterpillars were bad. They're fuzzy and cute, if that's your thing.
Who doesn't love caterpillars?
Just stay away from labeling this as anything elegant.
Oh, well, I guess we better move on to other things and not stir up a hornet's nest. I know you're not doing the Kentucky-Florida game this year, but you were there last year. That was a real defining moment in the Mark Stoops era, was it not?
It was, and I'll take you back 2 years, because I called that game each of the last 2 years, and I don't think you can look at last year in a vacuum. It has to be juxtaposed against the history of that series specifically and the Kentucky program as a whole, especially the way they lost that game 2 years ago. They should have won it. They were the better team on that Saturday night. I thought they had the better players. I thought they coached better, with the exception of two plays. And those were the two plays where they left a Florida wide receiver uncovered, one at the goal line. And the hurt and the agony that I saw in Commonwealth Stadium that night, the disbelief, it's by the way, it's why we follow sports. It's why we invest so heavily, because the highs can be high and the lows can be the lowest of lows. But the hurt and the agony that I saw in Kentucky fans that night, and I've told the story before, and she's probably listening right now, but there was a Kentucky fan that next morning on a 6 a.m. flight who struck up a conversation with us, and she said she's given away her season tickets after 20 years. And so a year later, when they won at Florida, I tweeted, I hope she still has her season tickets. And so, yes, that was a defining moment last year, winning in the Swamp, and the way Kentucky went about it, and the smash-mouth football that they played, with a blue-collar approach and identity that is Mark Stoops in this program. I thought it was a perfect metaphor. But even to go deeper and compare it to how painful the loss was the year before, I think it makes it really stand out.
I would guess that anybody who thought Kentucky was ever going to make an ascension up the ladder of the SEC probably would have guessed it would have been done with something like, you know, the air raid offense that Hal Mumme brought.
Sure.
Something like that.
Yeah.
As opposed to winning in the offensive and defensive lines. And I think that's probably, I'm guessing, surprising to folks that Mark Stoops has been able to do it this way.
Well, people think, and compare it to the Tennessee situation right now, people are thinking, well, you know, if we could go back in time, if we had Mike Leach, that would separate us and allow us to differentiate between the programs that will beat us at their game, which is recruiting, and maybe we could be different, and that difference would set us apart. I'm waiting on a stat here, and I hope it comes into my inbox before we finish today. But Kentucky's success between the tackles last year against Florida was the difference in that game. And Florida's pretty light on the interior this year. Kentucky has that same opportunity to gash them between the tackles. But your point, I think, is well taken, that everyone thinks that to be to come from a lesser program to join the elite, you have to do something different than what the elite are doing. What Mark Stoops has proven is that he can do it the same way, but he can do it with a different type of player. And he can go with a recruiting base and turn his attention away from where most people look and be a player in the upper Midwest and get guys there to come in and be difference makers. Sprinkled, of course, with plenty of guys throughout the South who, from a skill position standpoint, obviously. To me, that's the secret of the success. And coming in and establishing a culture that this is who we are and we're not going to take a back seat anymore, that's what's amazed me about it and I think impressed me the most about the way they built that program, is the administration had the patience to allow them to build that culture and then to get enough playmakers in there, whether it were Josh Allen or Benny Snell, enough playmakers in there to be a difference maker on any given Saturday.
Steve Spurrier had a good run for a few years at South Carolina. Missouri came into the league, won a couple of East titles. But I think everybody's, since it's been in divisions, they've looked at Florida, Tennessee, Georgia and then there's a line of demarcation, and then the rest of the East, and then occasionally, as I said, somebody could move above that line into the top group. Is it possible that Kentucky replaces Tennessee in there with Florida and Georgia?
Well, I think they've already replaced Tennessee.
Long term. You know, yeah, right now, at the moment, they have. Yeah. I'm just talking about, you know, over 10 years, the next 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, think about, there was a great book written about this Tennessee situation that came out, I think, last year by my friend Mark Nagy, and the title of it was Decade of Dysfunction. this Tennessee program has been a dumpster fire for over 10 years now. Now, they had, you know, Butch had a top 10 team at one point going into Alabama, I think, 4 years ago. And they won some games, and they obviously had great recruiting classes, but they have not been on stable footing since Philip Fulmer left, since he was fired, and now he's back in there as AD. To compete, you know, are they a better program than Tennessee right now? Absolutely. Do they have a better chance of competing for championships? Yes. But I'm not ready to say that anybody in the division is ready to compete for a championship until they beat Georgia. No one's done that in a couple years. And having spent a little bit of time around that Georgia program, they got, when they hired Kirby Smart, they got exactly what they were hoping to get. They got a Nick Saban clone. Now, whether it's Nick Saban 2.0 or a Xerox copy, we won't know until Kirby wins a national championship. But from a recruiting standpoint and a financial standpoint, investment in the program, they just announced plans for a new football facility over there that's coming down the line, I believe. They're going to be really tough to knock off of that perch going forward just because they have so much momentum from a recruiting standpoint. And we know that in any collegiate sport, it's who you got, you know, who are your dudes that you're putting out there on any given Saturday.
For Kentucky and Florida tomorrow night, how much less of a chance do you give Kentucky to get the win, if any, without Terry Wilson and with Sawyer Smith now being the starting quarterback?
Well, the secret will be, as it was last year, the secret will be success between the tackles. And, you know, Terry Wilson in that game last year, while the team was having success between the tackles, was able to hit a couple of deep balls off of play action, and that always goes hand in hand. So can Sawyer Smith take advantage of those opportunities? Those opportunities won't be there unless they can run the football. I'm confident they can, but if for some reason that doesn't come to fruition, it'll be a tough time anyway. Florida's got more sacks than any other team in the FBS and 7 more than any other SEC team. Now, I don't expect Kentucky to put Sawyer Smith in a position where he's spending a lot of time dropping back and holding the football. But Florida does have guys who can get into the backfield. I think that's the key for Kentucky offensively. The line didn't move much when the quarterback situation changed. I think if this were Florida and they lost their quarterback, the line would have moved significantly. Franks was 25 of 27 last week against UT Martin, set a school record. He was really good. I don't know which Felipe Franks we'll see over the course of this season. And that was only the Skyhawks, obviously. But that was he's a very emotional quarterback. When he, and not unlike others, but he has a hard time, if he's been hit a couple times or he gets off to a slow start from a completion percentage standpoint, he has a hard time getting it going because he gets really down on not only himself, but his teammates. He gets down on his coaching staff. If he gets off to a good start, then things change. And he can play at an elite level. So I think watching Felipe Franks and his trend starting first quarter, how is he playing, will also be a good indicator as to how that game might go.
Which game are you on tomorrow?
We've got LSU Northwestern State. Ed Orgeron against his alma mater. Yeah, it'll be a glorified LSU scrimmage. they were so impressive last week against Texas, and now it's going to be, you know, can LSU compete with itself at a high level? They've got a pretty easy schedule now through the rest of this month and into late October, but I think they deserve a top 5 ranking. I think they can beat Alabama. I think they can win the West. I don't know that they could beat Alabama if they had to play them 13 times, but if they are trending the right way, they can absolutely beat them on one Saturday.
Have a good one. Good call tomorrow. We'll see you soon. Thank you, Tom.
Tom, thanks, and tell Shannon to get that thing under control.
I'll work
we'll
on
do
it.
Our best.
Yeah.
We're heading to a break. It's Tom Hart of ESPN. Mike Pratt's coming up next. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Remember to post your pictures in your UK gear at your tailgate tomorrow and tag at Wild Eggs Lexington for a chance to be the most enthusiastic fan. Get yourself a Wild Eggs gift card. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Back to the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. We bring on Mike Pratt on Twitter. It's at MikePratt22. His weekly visits to our program presented by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Check them out at Boone'sButcherShop.com. How was the golf game yesterday, Mike? What'd you shoot?
Well, as I told you at the turn, played really well on the front.
42 at the turn, right?
Yeah, and after that was not as good. I had a 48 on the back, and I hacked it up. I mean, it was a total hack job. And that's about as good as I can do, though, anymore, with my limited skills.
Well, you were not a good fourth quarter team then yesterday. What about the Wildcats if this gets into the fourth quarter tomorrow night?
Well, you're at home, baby. You're at home. And I think that says a lot for a lot of good things that could happen. You know, I can't believe they're half 8.5-point dog. I know. New quarterback, I get all that. But, you know, last year's game, Kentucky controlled the line on both sides and really made a difference if you go back and look at some of the stats.
It's just what Tom Hart was talking about. Same thing. He did that game last year.
So the line is, I would say, as good as last year's, okay, offensively.
Yes. Now, defensively better.
You know, we've got to see. We've got to see, but there's potential there. And, you know, Franks at times will throw. He'll make some mistakes. Okay, try to force the ball in places. That's his track record. Great high school player, you know, big time recruit, yada yada. But he struggled at times. I think last year wasn't he their leading rusher? Didn't complete that many passes, but was their leading rusher. If that's what it takes to get the W, maybe we ought to see about making Franks their leading rusher again, right?
Yeah, that would be great. I'm just gonna look at the stats. I'll try to confirm that. Let me jump to a little basketball. We've got you here. The fair pay.
Basketball. What in the world's that?
The Fair Pay to Play Act passed out in California. I guess still waiting the governor's signature, but it's a hot button issue in college sports. NCAA is trying to slow the train down. Do you think this is going to be more widespread sooner rather than later in terms of other people taking up these kinds of measures to put some pressure on the NCAA?
Yeah, I think so. I think anytime you have athletic departments running, making everybody in the athletic department doing very well and working hard and all those kind of good things, I think it has some people who don't understand the inner workings of an athletic department a little antsy, maybe a little jealous, I don't know. And first thing you can do is say players should be making money off their likeness. And there's some real good thoughts behind that, Tom. But how do you control it? It's easy to say.
That's going to be the challenge.
Yeah, it's easy to say, okay, Tom Leach is – he's going to get X amount of dollars. Now, again, go back and research. I was reading an article on Boeheim. Boeheim's kid, obviously not a charity case, but he's playing basketball on scholarship at Syracuse. And his cost of attendance per month is like $1,200, $1,500. He gets that, as all athletes do at Syracuse. And, you know, I sometimes just wonder now, are you going to have a union for these players? Are they going to have to pay dues? How do they pay taxes? I mean, it's a complicated deal, whether you think they should be paid or not. It's very complicated. And the person that comes up with answering that question probably will get the deal done. And I'm not against athletes receiving more money from their likeness or whatever, but how does it work? How does it work internally on team to team, you know, sport to sport, male, female, et cetera? How's this going to work? Or are we just going to say, give them the money, you figure it out? Well, it's not going to get done that way, okay?
Felipe Franks last year, 11 rushes. Some of those obviously were sacks for a net of 44 yards. P. Ryan had 34 yards. They only had 128 as a team, so I think you're right.
Yeah, Yeah, I do rusher. My research. You know that.
Good for you. Good for you. Good call. Couple of stories this week out on Tyrese Maxey, one in Sports Illustrated, one from our friend Kyle Tucker at The Athletic, who talked to his trainer. I think the consensus is he will lead this team in scoring this season. What have you heard about Maxey?
I heard he is a terrific all-around player, okay? And physically, he is ahead of the typical curve maybe of a high school guy, okay, which is to his advantage playing right now. I look forward to big things from him. In researching him and reading about him, seems to me that, you know, Tubby said this, Kentucky's not for everybody. First time I heard it said. Cal has said it many times, and they're right. I mean, I go back to my playing days, and we had some guys leave that should have never left. I mean, they're talented guys, Greg Sterick, Randy Knoll, really talented. But, you know, for whatever reason, it wasn't for them. So I think it seems like Calipari's got some good fits coming in for what he wants, playing for him, playing for Kentucky. And this kid seems to have it. This kid seems to get it. He gives you an effort according to everything I've read at both ends of the floor, and he's willing to share the ball, and that's so important.
Mike Pratt, thank you much. Talk to you soon.
Okay, buddy.
Mike Pratt joining us on the KentuckyHempWorks.com hotline. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We'll get to a break and come back to wrap up this edition of the show in just a moment. SEC Network just tweeted out a clip with Tim Tebow and Cash Daniel fishing out on the water somewhere. So look for that on the SEC Nation show tomorrow. I'll do segments, I'm sure, today on the SEC Network, but then look for it 10 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow. Our Tito's Vodka Race of the Week. We're going to take a look at the Grade 2 Pocahontas for two-year-old fillies at Churchill Downs on the card tomorrow. They've got a couple of stakes there. I think maybe three tomorrow on the opening weekend card. Lazy Daisy, 8-1 for Doug O'Neill. His horse ran really well in the debut and came back and beat half the field in the Grade 1 Del Mar Debutante. That is typically a race that produces several future winners. So take a look at Lazy Daisy for the Pocahontas tomorrow at a little bit of a price for our Tito's Vodka Race of the Week. Rest in peace, Lowell Hughes, member of the 58 National Championship team at Kentucky, also played football and basketball or baseball for the Wildcats, native of Eastern Kentucky, has passed away at the age of 81. Condolences to his family. Enjoy the game tomorrow. We'll be back to talk about it with Coach Ortmeier at the Wild Eggs in Palomar on Monday. See you then.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report Radio Network. Miss a show? Catch the podcast at TomLeachKY.com or on the iHeartRadio app.